It's the illustrious from high above Wyoming mainstream media. Joined by Mr. Misdemeanor himself, the Saratoga Sledgehammer. Starting your day the right way on the Independence Network. It's time for the morning show with your hosts, David Iverson and Jailbird Joey.
Is that time once again, the morning show on the Independence Network coming at you. Jailbird Joey driving the train this morning. Little cloudy, little rainy, but we're going to get to the business of the day anyway. Got my good friend and co-host, the illustrious from high above, Mr. David Iverson with me here this morning. What's on your mind today, David?
Oh, not a lot, man. Been looking at Sheridan Media this morning.
Interesting stories there.
Yeah. Let me tell you how excited I am about that. I'm not. And I, okay, so let me just mention that for a minute. A year ago, maybe 2 years ago, I probably wouldn't have said that. I probably would have been throwing a party and had the celebratory 1812 overture playing in the background. But I'm not exactly happy about this headline in Sheridan Media. Kinski won't seek re-election to the Wyoming Senate.
Yeah, before we get to the details on that, let's point out to the listeners how strange it is that we're sitting here kind of moping over the fact that Dave Kinski isn't running for Senate. And if normally we'd be like, okay, six in one hand, half dozen in the other, get out the way. But he showed some real conservative chops and backbone over this last session. And it would almost indicate that this guy is not only going to run again, he's actively going to defend the seat that he holds, knowing that he's in line to be, you know, vice president of the Senate. Well, he is right now. He'd be the majority leader of the Senate for the next 2 years. And then because senators are elected for 4 years, his last 2 years in the Senate would be a shoo-in for Senate president. And he did all the groundwork. He made all the, and I'm not just saying, yeah, you stomped the rhinos. He made good, solid procedural, conservative, and just, you know, outstanding arguments against everything that was thrown his way. He was front and center on a lot of the big actions that were controversial. The very first action of the Senate, he didn't really get involved with, but it was about him and restoring him to the chairman of that Appropriations Committee, House Bill 125. He argued very passionately and I think extremely effectively to look at how the Senate is run, dispel some of the rumors about all of the garbage going on. That's one of our greatest clips that we have, the pinkies in the air and the Senate according to Hoyle from a more genteel time of the Senate. And then he just kind of steps out. So it's a little confusing. I'm not going to hold it against him personally, but there's a lot of, I mean, even last night I hear there was a dinner or a lunch out there in Sheridan, and Dave Kinski gave no indication that this was his plan. But according to the story, this has been his plan since September to not run for this office again.
Yeah, that was interesting. You know, it's the April meeting of the Sheridan Republican Women, and that's a big deal here in Sheridan. They always hold a big lunch, and whatever Republican stuff is going on usually comes out at that meeting. And Dave Kinski stood up and talked about the session and the governor's vetoes and slammed Moonbeam pretty good. And then he sat down. And about the only thing he said is, well, we have to have a conservative majority in the Senate and a conservative majority in the House. And had I known that this headline was going to come out, I would have had that soundbite ready for you. But we'll have it tomorrow. But anyway, yeah, he gives a speech and, you know, he actually looks right at Lori Bratton and says, you know, welcome to the club, and says, you know, here's some advice for you. And then he sits down. Gave no indication whatsoever that he wasn't going to run. And then the morning after, it's in Sheridan Media that he's not running for re-election. Thanks a lot, Dave.
Well, me personally, yeah, I'm going to say I would have probably taken that opportunity with that captive audience who is desperately interested in this kind of information. Plus, you know, it's I know we don't like to get into tribalism, but that's your tribe. You're standing in front of your people. You know, to say it there before you go to the press, I would have done it that way. I don't know why Kinski didn't do it that way. But, yeah, that would have been a perfect opportunity to, I don't know, kind of show your connection to the people you've served and say you're so proud of serving of, I'm going to let you guys know this is coming out in the press tomorrow. I've decided I'm not going to run. Maybe it was just to avoid questions. Didn't want to get into it too deeply. I could see that as well. But you have, you know, again, you have your captive audience, your team. You're pretty safe in that environment. Granted, things might have gotten out about what was said, but the bottom line is you're stepping away. It doesn't matter. It's not like you're going to lose votes just right. Because people don't like your decision not to run again. Yeah, I don't know. I really enjoyed watching Dave Kinski work and listening to some of the things he had to say over this past session. But that brings us into the next reality, not to be dismissive of any of the things Senator Kinski did this last session or, you know, some good things he's done in the past. He was the author of the memo that will hopefully be enshrined in tradition and precedence saying, hey, these are the things that are not budget items, including capital construction and why. And, you know, good on him for the time he did. But now we have to look at there's currently no one running for that seat. And David loves when I prognosticate, and I rarely do it when it comes to things we have no indication of. But I'm going to guess what will happen, and we already heard rumors about this, was Barry Crago is probably going to put his name in for that Senate seat and try to run the gamut on the election there and represent, I believe it's Johnson and Sheridan County are both included in that district.
Yep.
Which will leave the seat for Buffalo, Johnson County in the House that Mark Jones is currently running for. I think that's House District 40 without a challenger, which makes me believe that Bill Novotny is going to crop right up running that race. And there's also a possibility. We still have a month before the filing season even opens in both districts, the House district that Crago might vacate and the Senate district that Kinski currently occupies, that we're just going to get the classic conservative kerfluffle there of, oh, it's an open seat and everybody run at it. And it's going to guarantee Barry Crago and Bill Novotny or whoever the moderate in that group is, ends up getting elected. And that's something we cannot afford right now, especially out of the Sheridan Johnson County area.
Well, the interesting part about that is, so Crago, he's got some chops in the House. As much as I hate to admit it, the Redcoats have given him a lot more responsibility. He had like at least five different committees in the House of Representatives. You know, he doesn't hold a leadership position, except, of course, he's the head of the Redcoat Caucus, the Wyoming Caucus, or one of the heads of it. You know, I don't want to use the word tradition, but typically people who have their eyes on a bigger prize spend a couple of terms in the House, and then they move to the Senate. And, I mean, that's been the case a lot in the Wyoming legislature. You know, another Sheridan senator, Bo Bipman, he spent a couple terms in the House, and then he went to the Senate. So I don't think that that's out of the realm of possibility. It's I think that running for that Senate district is quite a bit different than running for House District 40. Of course, the Senate district's a little bit bigger. There's a larger proportion of it in Sheridan County, and you know, the Barry Crago is not nearly as popular in Sheridan County as he is in Johnson County. And of course, there's more people in Sheridan County. So it's going to be an interesting race to watch if we're right about this whole thing. And I tend to think that we are, since Crago hasn't announced a run for the House yet. The whole Bill Novotny connection, that's kind of interesting too. If I were to, you know, make a list of the prominent Johnson County officials, Bill Novotny would have to be on the list. Sheridan's a little bit different in that it's a lot easier to bring up things that you did in the past and use them against you politically. And, you know, there's, and maybe Dave Kinski is an example of this. When he was mayor, There was a big controversy over a DUI that he got. And actually, and I don't know if I've ever told you this or not, Joey, but Dave Kinski is at least partially responsible for getting me involved in politics. When he got that DUI when I was in college at Sheridan College, and just all of the events that surrounded it, you had the entire college ticked off at him, and there were protests and demonstrations and all sorts of things. So I don't know. I think it's going to add an interesting dimension to the race. I don't think that you're off on your prediction. It's I've heard the rumor that Craig O's going to try to run for the Senate from multiple sources. So I don't know. I think the next couple days will be kind of interesting to see who announces where and makes what decision. But it definitely leaves a hole in the Senate. Kinski made a major turn to the right. And I think now that we know what we know, it's very clear why he did that. He was like, well, I'm not coming back. May as well swing for the fences. It's like your final game as a major leaguer, man. Take the big league swings and go out on top. But I don't know. Adds an interesting dimension to everything. And I don't know. We'll have to see where it goes.
Yeah, I want to take you down a little side trail here. You said something about Craig O has made his bones in the House, even though he's not House leadership yet. And there's normally a tradition of how ascension goes, at least in their mind. I still believe the people have something to do with it.
But, absolutely.
You know, most of these guys don't. I got a Facebook post here from Albert Summers on his own page. He's talking about him potentially running for the Senate. And he says he hasn't made his decision yet, although I think that that's his idea of building political capital. Ooh, if I build suspense, people be more excited, therefore vote for me if I don't announce right now. He knows he's running. But he states, in the tradition of the House in Wyoming, it is that you do not seek a House seat after you have served as Speaker of the House. I believe this is a good tradition because it ensures dynasties are not created and power is not held by one individual too long. So since we're talking about traditions, and Albert Summers mentions it specifically, then Albert, why did you support Steve Harshman for his second run as Speaker of the House? Pretty unprecedented there. And why are you still so supportive of Steve Harshman staying in the House long after he's been Speaker twice? So these are the kinds of, and I bring that up not only to, you know, stick a barb at Albert Summers. I think there's a lot of hypocrisy in a lot of the things he says and does, but it brings up, that's the kind of questions we're going to need to hear from the people when it comes to these candidates, whether they're incumbents or not, but especially if they are incumbents. Here's your voting record. Here's what you're saying. And then here's what you've done. You know, point out the hypocrisy. And some of this is going to get down to, as we saw in the last session, what do you believe about tradition? Process, procedure, precedent, because we can't just go by the law anymore. And obviously half of the legislature doesn't care about the platform or the principles of their espoused party. So it really needs to come down to, when you're talking to these candidates, what is your plan? What do you believe? And even if you don't get, you know, this isn't playing gotcha, but you can at least get an answer from them that could be effective next time they run, saying, well, wait a minute, when you ran last time, you convinced us of this. And now here we are, and you're a giant hypocrite, and we're not going to reelect you. So I don't know exactly what the landscape's going to look like, but I do know that there's plenty of evidence out there of what the belief of members of the Wyoming caucus are, what they think is right, what they think is proper. And Barry Craig O is right in the middle of that as the grand poobah of the Wyoming caucus. So we need to be very careful. And I'm telling you, with this guy, mudslinging's not going to work. We've been doing it for quite a few years. The reality is out there. It hasn't been really mudslinging. It's mostly report cards and voter records. This is what you said you would do, and this is what you're doing. But I think just piling on this guy with negativity is not going to make sure that whatever conservative candidate ends up in that race for the Senate of Sheridan and Johnson County. I don't think that the going low or just making it all negative is going to work. You have to hit them on principle and accountability for their actions.
I'll agree with you in part. But when you have a candidate who has so many areas that you could attack, hypocrisy areas is what I'm talking about. I think you absolutely have to expose that part of it. There's been a lot of op-eds written by Barry Crago and, you know, him and Clark Stith and Albert Sommers that they are really, really, really negative. And it's I think you have to understand the reality of Sheridan politics in that it is way more conservative than is Johnson County. I mean, I think that part is pretty clear. But, you know, here's the thing I want to point out. Like, exposing facts is not being negative. Telling the truth is never, never negative. Now, it might reveal some negative things about you, but that doesn't mean that you're mudslinging. Now, that's what the liberals want you to think. The Redcoats always say that when we expose their voting records, look at how divisive they're being. Look at how mean they're being to me. Well, that's not being mean. That's telling the truth about who you are. And, you know, so in Buffalo, my dad owns a property that's right on Fort Street, which also happens to be right beside Barry Crago's law office. And there's a big sign out front. And one of the things that Dad and I do is we put inflammatory things up on the giant 30-foot sign for all to see. And after one of the legislative sessions, the sign facing Crago's office says, "You are how you vote," or "How you vote is who you are," I think is what it said. And, you know, when you look at their voting records, you know, Barry Crago is on the top of the spending list. Barry Crago has consistently voted against the people. I'm somewhere in my giant stack of stuff. I've got the roll call vote where he voted to give himself and all of his buddies a raise in the Wyoming House of Representatives. There's the roll call vote where he didn't want to ban men from playing in girls' sports. I mean, there's a lot of things that are absolutely the truth. How about the video clip of Barry Crago voting against penalties in a gun control or a Second Amendment bill? I mean, there's lots of things that can be exposed. That's not mudslinging. That's not going low. That's telling people the truth. And so while it may not work in Johnson County with, and now let's move to Bill Novotny, you know, the major drunk driving thing, that was a big deal. At least I thought it was a big deal. Didn't harm his candidacy whatsoever. That might play differently in Sheridan County. With the history of Dave Kinski getting the DUI when he was mayor and then firing the cop that arrested him. So I think all of those things can be exposed and frame it in such a way that look at how hypocritical these people are. And that's not being negative. That's telling the truth about who they are. There's a big difference between playing the, and we see these campaign ads every 2 and every 4 years, well, I guess that would be every 2 years, advertisements on the TV, and it's got the scary music behind it. And you remember the 3 a.m. phone call ad that Hillary Clinton put up. So that is going negative. And while you might also be telling the truth in it, it's still framing in such a way that it's a negative campaign ad. But if you look at the flyers that were sent out about Barry Crago in Johnson County, those were absolutely the truth. And yes, there was a little bit of snark to them. But I think it's absolutely necessary that their voting record is laid bare for all to see. Hey, this is what you are voting for. And fortunately, in Sheridan County, the political apparatus works a little bit better than it does in Johnson County. In Johnson County, the Republican Party is run by a bunch of redcoats. That's not the case in Sheridan County. And so, I mean, I think that while I think the election's going to turn out a little bit differently between Johnson County and Sheridan County. And think about this. You've got Dave Kinski, who now is not running, and Barry Crago in the same district. So theoretically, the same people that would vote for Kinski are probably going to vote for Barry Crago for senator. So I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of variables to this. I think that it'll be, depending on who runs on the conservative side for Kinski's seat, I think it'll end up being a very interesting race.
Well, I'm looking forward to watching it. I like a little suspense and mystery, maybe even a little stress in my life. And that's one I can deal with either way it goes. Of course, I'll have my preference. And I don't think you disagreed with me in part. I maybe floated an incomplete argument. That's exactly what I'm saying. Don't just go out and bash a candidate. Have your facts and data lined up. There's plenty of good reasons with evidence to say, hey, Barry Crago's got some issues. And you're right, that dynamic for both Barry Crago and Bill Novotny that will now include a large portion of Sheridan County voters, that's going to play as long as that data set, quantifiable reasons. You know, one of my rules, point fingers, name names, and back it up with quantifiable evidence. Yeah, you're allowed to not like somebody for stupid personal biased reasons. That's what elections are. You're allowed to vote any way you want. But if you want to get out there and, you know, have some influence and conversations with the people, get those numbers locked in and make sure you have references to the voting record you're talking about. Because people are going to take you saying this is a bad guy different ways if you can't spell out very clearly what it is that got you to that position on that individual. So, yeah, I don't know that it's going to make it any easier or harder on anybody else running in the area. Mark Jones might have a little more difficulty, but I don't think so. He was either going to run against Barry Crago, Bill Novotny, or someone else who jumps into the race. And I think in a conversation I had with Mark towards the end of the session when he told me he was running is, I don't care if I'm running against nobody. I'm running hard.
I think
Lori's kind of in the same position. You know, when Cyrus dropped out, she said, oh, I'm not stopping just because I don't have an opponent right now. So we do have some good choices out there. I'll be interesting to see who the conservatives come up with as a replacement for Dave Kinski. I don't even want to get into the possibility on that. And before people start sending in all these questions, no, David doesn't live in Kinski's district, and he hasn't lived in Sheridan County long enough to legally run for the Senate there. So it's not going to be David Iverson. As much as you'd want it to be, it can't be.
Well,
and
I don't know.
And then all of our other good friends are already tied up in the legislature with their own races.
I don't know, Joey. I mean, technically, I could still run for that Senate district, but I learned from Dan Zwanitzer that you don't necessarily have to live where you're running. You know, I mean, I've given serious consideration in running for House District 43 down in Cheyenne. You know, so we look, and Bob Nicholas, he even proved that again, that you don't necessarily have to live in your district. You know, think about it. His wife says that he lives in Lander and he represents a district in Cheyenne. I don't know if there's some sort of weird redistricting thing that happened there too. It's all smoke and mirrors as far as that part goes. But no, I won't be running for the Senate. I'm having way too much fun where I'm at. But I do think that we'll end up having a good candidate in that Senate district regardless. And, I mean, I've heard a couple of names floated around. It's going to be interesting regardless. I mean, there's a really different dynamic happening between Johnson and Sheridan counties.
Yeah, and that's really the area to watch. We should probably move on. We've beat this one down, and we don't have any additional information other than Dave Kinski's not running for the Senate. But, the Johnson County, Sheridan County politics over the last couple of years has kind of become real interesting to watch and very impactful on what's going on across the state, not only in the party, but also in the legislature. So we'll keep you up to date with that. And let's see what else we got. Looks like Judge Owens up in Teton County doesn't want to do her job and is hoping the state Supreme Court will do it for her. And the state Supreme Court said, nope, do your job first and we will rule on the constitutionality of whatever comes out of your district court. Looks like that list of questions sent to the Wyoming Supreme Court based on Wyoming's existing abortion bans, which is a case that's been going back and forth in the news for quite a while, but we haven't seen a whole lot of movement on. Both sides, the plaintiffs, which include doctors and nurses and advocacy groups and, well, baby murderers. I'll say it, no problem.
Baby killers, yep.
And the state, which does not include Secretary of State Chuck Gray or any of the legislative representatives. I believe it was Rachel Rodriguez Williams and Chip Nyman who attempted to be involved in the case, but they were denied. So it's just the state of Wyoming. Both sides have requested a summary decision from Judge Owens. No trial, just, hey, make your decision. And before getting there, Judge Owens sent a list of 12 or 13 constitutional questions to the state Supreme Court saying, before I rule, I want your opinion on these things. And the Supreme Court said, no, make your ruling. We'll deal with whatever comes out of your court the way the court normally runs. I believe the quote was from the opinion in state Supreme Court. This court believes a ruling from the district court would refine and narrow issues the Supreme Court would be called upon to determine. And then the high court on Tuesday declined to answer a series of constitutional questions posed by the Teton County judge who's presiding over a legal challenge to a pair of statewide abortion bills. And yeah. So what do you think is going on with this case there, David?
I think that though we don't like the idea, we have to accept the fact that some judges are political. In Wyoming, it's an electoral decision whether a judge is retained or not. And whether we like it or not, judges act in their own political best interests in some cases. This is the second time that Melissa Owens has sent questions to the Supreme Court, and the second time the Supreme Court has said, no, you need to do your job. What you're seeing here is a judge that doesn't want to make a decision and then be reversed. If there's one thing that judges don't like happen to them is if a higher court overturns their decision. It doesn't look good on their record. I'm sure it doesn't help them politically if there is any political motivations there. But this is a pretty high profile case, and there's no Wyoming case law that says that abortion is healthcare. And that's the decision that Melissa Owens has to make. I mean, that's the central question before her court. And she's just not wanting to make that decision and instead wants the Wyoming Supreme Court to set a precedent by which she can rule. That's exactly what's going on here. She wants to be able to look at existing case law, that is, something the Supreme Court has said, and then claim in her ruling, hey, look, the Supreme Court has said this, therefore that's the way that it is. It's completely trying to skirt her responsibility as a district court judge. Now, there's a reason why the plaintiffs in this case chose that particular court to file the lawsuit in, because arguably Melissa Owens, is one of the more liberal judges in Wyoming, or at least that was the thinking. So I think it's a clear case of that judge not wanting to do her job and the Supreme Court saying, no, you need to do your job and then we'll do ours.
Yeah, I'd agree there. And I don't get it. Of course, I'm just a lonely peon, non-essential workaday knucklehead reading and looking into everything I'm seeing. But what I'm seeing is, I don't know why this is such a difficult decision for Judge Owens.
No matter
what happens, it is guaranteed that the result of this case is going to the Wyoming Supreme Court. So you're going to get those answers. And I think it is exactly what you said. Judge Owens wants to make sure she's on the right side, not of the case, not of the Constitution, but of the future higher court's decision. She doesn't care one way or another. I'm sure she has her personal reasons and probably doesn't want abortion to be banned, but she's more interested in that resume saying I wasn't overturned. And her position right now is, well, let someone else do my job so I don't have to take personal responsibility. But the reality is, no matter what, this is going to the state Supreme Court, but it's got to be based on something. There has to be questions of constitutionality and law based on court action, not court inquiry for the state Supreme Court to decide on. Basically, what she did was send a bunch of what ifs. She's like a 4-year-old. Well, what now? What if, mommy? What if this happens? What if that happens? Hey, you're there to interpret the law and apply it from the bench. We'll tell you if you did it right or not based on the Constitution after we know what we're dealing with. We're not going to deal with what ifs forever. The other thing is, both sides have requested summary judgment. She doesn't have to honor either of those requests. If Judge Owens is really so afraid, and this may be something she's more afraid of, just send it to a jury trial and put it on the people. structure the rules and the jury instructions to where you're unencroachable in the way you've instructed the jury and you ran that case as the judge, and then just say, hey, a jury decided. And, you know, if she really wants to wash her hands of it, that's the way to do it. And I guarantee you the reason she's not is because she knows what the outcome in Wyoming, even in Teton County, of a jury trial on banning abortion would likely end up being. But even that doesn't matter because that will end up in the state Supreme Court anyway as well. But it just seems like there's a lot of lagging and foot dragging for whatever reason. I don't know if they're trying to let this influence the next election, hoping the next election turns out to where they get enough on a certain side of ideology in the legislature where they'll attempt to repeal this law so that the court case doesn't have to go through. But that's a long way off. And we kind of need an answer on this, because if you remember in the governor's State of the State address, he did bring this up. And that since the abortion bans have been signed into law but not taken effect because of the court challenges, about 500 babies have been murdered. You're looking at about 10 babies a week, 10 human lives, 10 American lives a week. And then, of course, you know, they're doctors, so the abortion providers take a two-week vacation. There's your 52 weeks right there. And I think that, you know, it's an atrocious number. And we should really start leaning into every day Judge Owens doesn't make a decision, doesn't start a trial, or continues to waste time is another 10 babies she has assisted in murdering. Oh, sorry, every week.
I think that's right on. But there's a couple of things that I don't know that we're missing, but I think we ought to talk about. First of all, the Dobbs decision clearly says that abortion is left up to the states. That's why Roe v. Wade was overturned, that there is no federal right to an abortion. It doesn't say anything about, you know, killing babies in the Constitution. In fact, it indicates the opposite. But anyway, but there's no federal right to an abortion. So says the United States Supreme Court. And that's left up to the states. So now we come to Wyoming, where there have been two abortion bans. One, which is almost an outright ban, though it does have some exceptions that I disagree with, and we can talk about those later, but there are a couple of exceptions in it. Other than that, according to the Life is a Human Right Act, abortion is banned. And there's also a chemical abortion banned. And the vast majority of abortions that happen now are done so chemically. I cannot for the life of me pronounce the drug, but there's one drug that the law specifically says in Wyoming you can't use this for an abortion. So it's clearly a matter left up to the state legislature, and our state legislature has clearly said that abortion is banned. And so Melissa Owens's job is to say whether or not that law comports with the Wyoming Constitution, with Wyoming law. And that's the part that she's dragging her feet on. So the other part that I think you have to take into consideration is that the folks that filed the lawsuit in the first place are activists. They are true believers in the idea that abortion is healthcare, that women ought to have the right to kill another innocent human life, and that those folks want abortion legal for as long as possible in Wyoming. And they really do believe that an unborn baby is not a human, even though all science points to the fact that it absolutely is. I can give you a number of reasons and the reasoning to support that. But the people that filed this lawsuit are true believers. They are radical leftists that want abortion legal for as long as possible. And the only conclusion we can draw from that is they want to kill as many babies as possible. And as inflammatory as that sounds, it's absolutely the truth. So the longer that Melissa Owens drags her feet, that's more babies that are going to die because of somebody else choosing that their life is meaningless and that they don't have any rights. So we really are dealing with a couple of different variables here. One, that you've got activists that really they are true believers. Second, you have a judge that's dragging her feet, and you have to look at the consequences of her doing so and waiting to issue a decision. You have her not wanting to make a decision on it, and that's the back and forth with the Supreme Court. The longer she drags that out, the longer it is until she has to make a decision. So, I mean, I think that we've got some really important issues that surround this whole thing.
I would agree, and I want to take it away from law for a second, because I know the court is compelled to say, in the jurisdiction that I oversee and the state of Wyoming and the law for the state of Wyoming, I have to consider all these points. But if you go to the reality of the situation, the arguments of the individuals, what this case is about is principle versus convenience. Because in the Dobbs decision, it said, nope, you don't have any federally protected right to murder babies, and it is a state's rights issue. It didn't go and legalize or ban abortion in the United States of America. Now, here in Wyoming, we largely have the principle of don't murder babies. We've passed laws to that effect. Multiple laws, obviously, because that's what's being challenged. And the only reason that the regulation of abortions bill from this year isn't law is because it was vetoed by the governor. It had outstanding support, even though there was tons of challenges and attempted amendments thrown at it. It still passed the legislature and went to the governor's desk. So that question, I think, in Wyoming has been answered based on the principle. Now, when I say convenience on the other side, that's really where the complaint is coming from of, we don't want to have to drive outside of Wyoming to murder our babies. It's available to you. You just, catch a flight to California, maybe even drive right down to Colorado. And I'm not saying it's right, but you got to make a stand somewhere and say, outside of our borders, hey, we don't have any control of that. But within the state of Wyoming, we're going to say no. We, damn your convenience over taking an innocent life. If you really want to kill your baby, go somewhere else to do it. And I know that that's a real shoddy argument. Well, you still have abortion. Yes, but you have to, focus and control the things that you can focus and control on. And right now, Wyomingites can only deal with Wyoming. And if you truly believe that overturning Roe versus Wade with the Dobbs decision was a good thing, you need to know what you're talking about, because that was purely a states' rights issue. So if you're in support of states' rights, you can't technically be in opposition to other states that make bad decisions. You have to support that liberty-minded sovereignty principle and then eventually gain the foothold, set the example saying, no, abortion's bad, to change what those other states are doing through their own volition. So when it comes down to it, I haven't heard any good legal arguments other than something that doesn't exist in law of abortion is healthcare for women. I hear it constantly called, what is it called? Reproductive health.
You're
not worried about reproducing. That's why you're getting an abortion. You're not reproducing. And that hasn't been established as a legitimate thing, that abortion is a women's healthcare issue. It's like anytime you go and see a doctor for anything, it's healthcare, or anytime there's some kind of surgical procedure. Last time I checked, a lot of the same regulations apply to cosmetic surgery, but that's not healthcare in many cases. And I don't want to hear the arguments about the marginalized. Well, some people need reconstructive surgery in order to block. Yeah, okay, fine. I got sleep apnea too. Whatever. That isn't medical. There's a medical benefit or a medical precedence in that procedure. But yeah, it really comes down to convenience. That's what the whole argument I'm hearing is we want to be able to do this in Wyoming. And I'm sure I'll catch a bunch of crap for it, but hey, if you want to murder your baby, just go down to Denver. We'll deal with that in the future, but right now, just go down to Denver.
Well, it's clearly a states' rights issue, and that's what the Dobbs decision said, is that it's entirely left up to the states. Now, there are 20-some-odd states that ban abortion, and the rest, they've got various restrictions on it. I don't know that there's any states that are, that have abortion on demand for however long you want to wait. But, the states are kind of split on this issue. And because it is a states' rights issue, the state of Wyoming, or at least the legislature, has clearly said a couple of times that we don't want abortion. And so Melissa Owens just needs to make a decision. She needs to do her job and stop trying to play patty cake with the Wyoming Supreme Court. They already know that that's coming to their bench, so let's just get on with it.
Yeah, and to tie these two stories we've been talking about this morning together, this is very important, and they are very related, because the individuals we elect to represent us in the House and the Senate, whether they have an incumbency or they're newcomers, they're going to be making future decisions. And like I said at the beginning of talking about this court case, they're looking for a big enough majority to maybe run repealer bills against Wyoming's abortion laws. So if you have candidates that are going into seats, especially if they're incumbents and they have voting records, not just on the final bill, we've talked about how that turns out, but really dig into, did they vote for certain amendments? Did they vote against things in committee to try to kill anti-abortion legislation? Because there's a possibility in the next couple of years, we're going to see an attempt to push back through repeal laws. And I'll take all, I don't know if it's credit, but I'll take the responsibility for stating, if you elect Barry Crago to the Senate and Bill Novotny to the House, you're going to have one more vote in each chamber to make sure that killing babies in Wyoming stays legal.
Ooh,
because
I don't,
of their voting record, their stances on other things.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd go that far. Typically, Barry Crago's been pretty consistently pro-life. I can't think of... well, no. Okay, so hold on. Let me go back on that, because he was the author of... He tried to put a trigger amendment on the Life as a Human Right Act, which would have effectively stayed that and allowed the first trigger bill. See, this is where it gets confusing, because we originally had a trigger bill that said if Roe v. Wade is overturned, then abortion is effectively banned. There were restrictions in that one, or exceptions in that one too, but they weren't nearly as clearly written as they are in the Life as a Human Right Act. So during the debate on the floor, Barry Crago attempted to put a trigger amendment on the Life as a Human Right Act, and effectively it said if the court overturns the first trigger bill, see, I told you it gets confusing, then this bill would kick in. And so essentially that would have, I don't know what you want to call it, invalidated the Life as a Human Right Act. So if you take that into consideration, he was in favor of the first trigger bill. I don't know. I mean, I don't think that he would fall on the side of any sort of pro-abortion thing. If anything, maybe weakening the restrictions a little bit, but I don't think that you would see him try to outright repeal it. Now, I don't know about Bill Novotny.
Well, let's talk about that. I don't think Barry Crago would lead the charge and sponsor a bill that we, you know, kind of just talked about, but I've seen consistently that certain procedural arguments, the argument of unintended consequences, he's very susceptible to. So that if a bill is presented in the right manner and it has these questions of, you know, applicability, enforceability, or unintended consequences, I think it's very easy to push Barry Crago into a lukewarm fence sitting, you know, back to his red coat roots. Bill Novotny, I will state implicitly, no problem. He has no respect for life, at least on I-25 and I-90.
Now, that's
so
true.
So if we're going to talk about the right to life, he may be anti-abortion as a political stance, but there is no example of Bill Novotny being a champion for life or even respecting life in his own personal decisions. And we've seen him be a snake on plenty of other things. So I have no doubt he could easily be also convinced to, well, you know, it's just what's best for Wyoming, and considering all the constituents and the 0.005% of people that actually want to murder their babies and whatever he's got to do. But I have no doubt and plenty of evidence that Bill Novotny does not respect life in any way, shape, or form.
Well, the only, I can tell you this, that the only decimal point that Bill Novotny involves himself in is one that's 0.187 on the side of the interstate. But I think you're absolutely right there. I mean, if you're going to get in your car and you're going to get blackout drunk, or get blackout drunk, then get in your car with another open beer and drive what is presumably all the way from Sheridan to Johnson County, because we don't know exactly where he got on the interstate going the wrong way, and then elude police and get arrested on the side of the interstate. By the way, I've tried really hard to get that section of interstate around I-25 and I-90 renamed the Bill Novotny Interchange, but I haven't had a lot of traction on that. I do get a little worried every time I go through there, though.
Yeah, I think that would have to be a community effort. I think it would probably be more likely if we just paid for a billboard right there.
Excellent idea.
Yeah, we should probably do that. It would be easier to get that across if we could have actually gotten the body cam footage of that. We got a dash cam of the police driving one direction and then headlights coming directly at them. But the body cam footage of that interaction might have helped with that a little. But again, you know, YDOT's already so strapped in their budget. I don't know if we can afford to be renaming highways that they're not going to repair, maintain, or plow. It's, you know, just a conservative streak in me. We'll just, if we really want it, we'll get a billboard.
So another topic I want to talk about, and this one might seem a little bit off, but there's an article in the Cowpie, and it's entitled Gillette Hospital Board Considers Allowing Guns in Some Areas. So my first thought of this is, first, why? I guess my first question would be, is the Gillette Hospital supported by local government at all? Secondly, I don't know the answer to that. But secondly, if it's a private organization, should private organizations be able to say we don't want guns in this area or that area? In my thinking, yes. If it's private property, they absolutely have the right to say that. But I thought the article was interesting in that a hospital, and hospitals usually are included in the list of buildings where, you know, guns are rightly or wrongly banned. But here you have an example of the Gillette Hospital Board considering whether or not to say, go ahead and carry your firearm. What say you, Signor Corrente?
Well, I don't know about the first one. I'm leaning towards yes. Let me pull up the story here. If there's a board, and I get it, even private organizations have their own board of directors. But in the story here, the first paragraph, to get ahead of likely continued efforts to repeal Wyoming gun-free zone, the Campbell County Health Board of Trustees is considering lifting some firearms restrictions at the Gillette Hospital. That would tell me, if it's the County Board of Health Trustees, that it definitely does get its support and funding. You know, it's a county hospital, or, you know, they call it the Gillette Hospital, but it's probably the Campbell County Health System or whatever. So I would say yes, it does. I like the fact that they're at least having the conversation, whether it's public or private, and saying, hey, we're reading the tea leaves here. What is the reality of us needing a gun-free zone here in the hospital? Of course, our argument always is, if some psycho wants to come into the hospital and start shooting it up, your sign is not going to stop anything, and having nobody else armed is not going to help. But that notwithstanding, let's talk about private hospitals. And this may make me a little more unpopular than I already am, but it's okay. You know, I'm the most accurate conspiracy theorist in the state of Wyoming. You know, you're a close second, but
we
get it right most of the time. If it's private property, whether it's a private residence, a private business, a private hospital, they absolutely have the right. That's a Fourth Amendment thing. That's a, you know, you're allowed to, on your property within certain limits, do things. And I liken that back to the big argument during COVID. Now, I don't believe that it should be acceptable. I don't know if it's unconstitutional for having an employer say, all of a sudden, you have to get this shot in order to continue working for me. But yeah, I would say, hey, it's a private business. You know, you should choose not to work there. Stand by your principles. Tom Kelly and I talk about this a bit on the Wide Right Turn episode that's coming up on Friday. But like Walmart, people are like, oh, you make me wear a mask to come in here. Hey, it's a private business.
Yep, it's private property.
They make you wear shoes, shirt, and pants. Well, sometimes, I don't know, I've seen people in Walmart push that one too. But
2 o'clock in the morning.
The bottom line is, if you're really pissed off at Walmart because of what they did over COVID, or if they make a new rule saying you can't have guns at Walmart, stop shopping at Walmart. And I don't mean stop going into Walmart until everything gets better, you feel better about it. Stop shopping at Walmart. Don't shop at Walmart online. Don't come back to Walmart later once they've fixed it. Or, oh, it's terribly inconvenient, I'm on the road, I'm just going to stop into Walmart real quick. Stand up and, you know, exercise your principles the only way they recognize. Your pocketbook. Stop spending your money there. So the second question is, if it's a private hospital, absolutely they have the right. and they should have a very clear policy on whether they do or they don't. And people need to get it right in their head that in certain cases, especially when it comes to private business, that business owes you nothing. You know, there's certain things that they can't do. But also another thing that I add into this argument is citywide or countywide smoking bans. If a business wants to let people smoke and let their business fail or succeed based on that, that's their choice. For the city to come in or the county to come in and say, we're not going to let anybody smoke indoors because, well, you know what? People that don't like it don't have to go in there. People that don't like it don't have to work there. There may be health concerns. There may not be. I don't know. But it's your choice to be in that environment in the first place. And it's the business owner's choice to either have a failing business or successful business based on whatever amenity they want to provide. And I can't remember if there was a third question in there, but that's kind of where I stand on that. I'm glad they're having the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. But the reason I asked that question is if it is publicly funded by the county or any other form of government, they don't get to make that decision because Wyoming has a preemption law, which incidentally was sponsored by Senator Dave Kinski. Well, the fix to the preemption law was sponsored by Senator Kinski. But literally it says that local municipalities don't get to regulate firearms, that state law preempts all firearms laws at the county or city level. So if it's a publicly funded building, they don't get to decide. Now, I love that they're having the discussion, and I think it's absolutely appropriate. You're dead on, pun intended, that a sign has never stopped a wacko with a gun anywhere. In fact, it kind of gives them a hint of, hey, if you want to shoot fish in a barrel, come on in here. You know, no guns on this premises. But if it's publicly funded and supported by the state, then it kind of has to follow state statute. Secondly, I absolutely agree that if it's a private organization, they have the right to say yes, no, maybe so, whatever they want, because it's private property. In Wyoming, at least for now, we still respect private property rights. And in your, you know, a private business is no different than your home. If you don't want people to smoke in your home, tell them to go outside or they just don't come over. If you don't want people carrying firearms in your place of business or your home, then don't invite them over. Now, if it's a private business, you mentioned Walmart. I think that's an excellent example. That's private property. And if they don't want firearms or they want you to wear a mask or they don't like pinstriped black ball caps that have an NY on the front of them, they can ban that too. You know, interesting situation I ran into concerning firearms and a private business. I lived in Gillette for a short period of time, and I walked into the Buffalo Wild Wings. And, you know, I almost always have a gun on me. And so at this particular occasion, I think it was, it was open carrying because I'd just been at the sporting goods store and have something to do with my Browning, looking for a holster or something. Anyway, so I walk in, sit down, get my meal. I'm about a third of the way into my meal, and the waiter comes over and he says, I'm going to have to ask you to leave. And I said, well, why? You know, I've got my food. And he says, well, we don't allow firearms in here. And I said, okay, I'm out of here, and I'll never be back. So I got all the way to the door, and the manager comes running out. And he says, I understand you had a problem at your table. I'm like, yeah. You know, this guy told me I had to leave because I'm carrying my firearm. And he goes, well, you know, you don't have to leave. And I said, don't worry. I'll never be back. But that's absolutely their right. And it's your right not to patronize those businesses. If you think that they are working against your Second Amendment rights, you don't have to do business there. Like Joey said, don't shop at Walmart. Don't buy Walmart stuff online. If you don't like what that company stands for, well, you have an absolute right not to do business with them. But the hospital, this one's interesting. Now, I guess you don't have a right to, you do have a right to make your own healthcare decisions, but I guess you don't have a right to be serviced at that hospital unless it's in the emergency room. But in any case, in my opinion, if it's publicly funded, they don't get to decide about firearms. But if it's a private organization, a private hospital, then absolutely, more power to them. But I do like that they're having the discussion ahead of, you know, what's been happening in the legislature, because I'm sure that we're going to see another version of House Bill 125 come next January.
no doubt at all that that's going to come back. But also the other reason I love that they're having a conversation is because what you said, the preemption law means they shouldn't be having or have to have this conversation. And it's only because of not just the veto, but the statement the governor added to his veto, which was completely contradictory to a law he had already signed, that local control when it comes to God-given constitutionally protected rights is a myth in Wyoming. I know we love this concept of local control, but when it comes to liberties, we already have laws that say, nah, okay, you can only go this far. So it really points out the hypocrisy in Governor Gordon's actions and excuses when he violated his promise to go ahead and sign any bill that came across his desk that would repeal gun-free zones, as these guys shouldn't even have to have this conversation. I like that they are having the conversation, especially because it points out that it's not their decision. What if they do decide, oh, okay, well, we're not going to go along with this, and this is going to be our new policy, and it's a violation of the Second Amendment and preemption. You know, you have to follow state law. It was specifically put into place so there wasn't a patchwork, a myriad of different gun laws in different towns, different counties, and different institutions within those, because, hey, people in Wyoming, you're not going to have all the amenities in the town you're in. And yeah, we go to different places. We don't always know the law. So we needed to have an established statewide firearms policy. And Governor Gordon violated the crap out of that with his veto, which has triggered this discussion in a group that, again, I'm glad they're having the conversation, but they shouldn't have to have the conversation. They have no say. Local control does not exist when it comes to Second Amendment rights in the state of Wyoming. And that's the law.
Absolutely. Interestingly enough, Joey, I just got another piece of breaking news on my handy-dandy little mobile device here. You might want to check yours. I'm sure you got the same little notification. But apparently, there's one senator in particular that's suggesting we might ought to have a special session concerning wolves. You know, I know it's hard to believe, but maybe there's a guy that might be thinking that, you know, this wolf situation is bad enough that maybe we should do that. Does this ring a bell? No, it wouldn't be Nancy Case, would it?
Yeah, I'm craving peanut butter and jelly sandwiches now. Unfortunately, we got about a minute left in the show, so I'm sure you'll knock that out in your show. But Nancy, come on, guy. You just voted against a special session to deal with real problems in Wyoming. Now all of a sudden you want to call for one? I am looking at my phone. Looks like we have an email, so we have faction data on this.
Yes, we do.
And I have no doubt you'll get it. Not surprised at all the source, though.
Nope. That shouldn't surprise anybody. If there's hypocrisy to be found, Nancy Case will find it, as he always does. It just blows my mind. You know, this goes back to what we were talking about at the very beginning of the show. Don't pay attention to what these people say. Pay attention to what they do. Because they are politicians through and through, and they're going to lie to you. I mean, if their lips are moving, they're lying. For the most part, that's what they do. Most of them are hypocrites, and this is just another example of that. So we've burned up another busy broadcast hour on the morning show. We got about a minute left. So, Joey, what do you got planned for your show today?
Well, I do believe that I'm going to jump into all of the concerns about voter registration, voter ID, which are two separate things, and what you should really be doing if you're actually concerned. I sat through the entire session, heard a lot of complaints, Gail Simmons and Wyoming Free or whatever they're called, saying, oh, you can't make these rules. Well, Chuck Gray's rules haven't gone into effect yet. So we're going to talk about where we're at right now, what you need to know and get the education on how to go vote in Wyoming, because everybody's complaining about not being educated or informed. And so I'm just going to educate and inform today. We're going to go through the entire process and look at what you need to do in the next month if you want to vote in Wyoming for the primary.
Yeah, so it's evidently the government's responsibility to tell me how to exercise the one duty that I have listed in the Constitution, which is to go vote. Absolutely an important show. I've got a number of different kind of a hodgepodge of things going on my program today. Make sure you check out the podcast. That's pretty much what I'm talking about. There, Americans for Prosperity is still running the Thank Cyrus Western ad for House Bill 170. that never made it out of the speaker's drawer. So there's a lot of stuff that's happening both on my program and on the podcast this morning. So stay tuned to the Independence Network. Don't miss a minute of all our great programming. We're adding more and more every single week. So keep it on in the background. Keep it on your phone, but just don't miss a minute of it.